Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to Chaotic Normal, the 5th edition D&D actual play podcast. The 5th edition D&D actual play podcast. There are no others and we will not acknowledge them. I am Ryan. I'll be one of your intrepid adventurers. And let's not do any long-winded intros. Let's just get right into the action. I'll throw to the Dungeon Master Graham and he will take it away. Take it away, Graham.
All right. Well, welcome to the Shattered Isles, a sea of adventure, treasure, exploration, and discovery. Across these islands, we'll experience tales of daring buccaneers, of rakish swashbucklers, and infamous pirates. We'll tell stories of free sailors who fight back against the greedy reach of an empire. We'll tell tales of a barbaric goblin tribes who haunt the ruins of an ancient kingdom. We'll tell tales of the sea and its goddess and her lover, the Storm King. We'll tell of the sailor's devil who trades a dark pact for a second chance at life and of the weird terrors that dream deep beneath the waves. We'll tell stories of the ancient ones and their great ruins that are hidden within the islands. In all of these tales, be prepared for great treasures, wondrous discoveries, and incredible seafaring adventure. And so now jumping into the plot. The dinghy's oars plunge into the beautiful turquoise blue waters. Beneath the dinghy, under perhaps 15 feet of water, the sea floor is covered in a vibrant coral reef that teems with sea life. Hundreds of fish dart about the reef in schools. Starfish crawl slowly across the coral. Crabs scuttle into the shadow of your dinghy, and you even spot an eel disappearing back into its lair. As your dinghy's oars plunge again into the water, the seven people aboard the dinghy are carried away from a sailing ship in the distance. That sailing ship, the Sturge, sits offshore at anchor, unable to approach closer due to these coral reefs. The ship boasts dark sails and flies no flag. A pirate ship, to be sure. The oars pull the dinghy closer to its destination, a small island that you've almost reached. The island's coast is made up of a luxurious white sand beaches and perilous sea cliffs. Within this coastal ring of beaches and cliffs, the island is full of dense, mysterious jungle, with high plateaus that gain in elevation until they meet at the base of a sharp peak at the heart of the island. Aboard this dinghy, crewing it, and wielding these oars that carry the dinghy from that sailing ship to this mysterious island, are seven people. Each of them, each of you, a crew member of that infamous pirate ship, the Sturge. In the prow of the dinghy, leading the expedition, is the first mate of the Sturge, a cruel human woman by the name of Estrid, who is as mean-tempered as the Cat of Nine Tails whip that she wears on her belt at all times. However, it is the other six crew members aboard this dinghy that are the focus of our adventure. It is these six crew members who will sail the high seas of the Shattered Isles, who will plunder riches beyond compare, explore uncharted isles full of ancient ruins and great adventure, and discover the secrets of that ancient civilization that once claimed these lands. It is these six crew members who will make a name for themselves in the Shattered Isles. So before we go any further into the exploration of this uncharted isle, let's begin by introducing these six crew members. Robert, you introduced our podcast, so why don't you introduce yourself first? I want to know specifically a bit about your character's backstory, a bit about what they look like, their personality, their bond, ideal, and flaw. And once you've introduced your character, go ahead and pick the next person to introduce themselves. This is like a proper Zoom call, you know, like a work meeting with icebreakers.
Oh, good. I was worried this was going to be fun.
Yes, I'm Ryan, and I will be playing Robert Graysand, a half-elf bard and son of renowned pirate Alonz Graysand. He was born and raised on the Golden Maid, his father's ship, and spent most of his young life with the deck of a ship below his feet. Although he was, you know, the son of the captain, he was never given any, like, special treatment. He was made to work and earn his keep, although he was taught how to swing a sword and to sing song like all the other sailors aboard the ship. He tragically lost his father when they went on a mission, and he, Alonz left Robert in Port Providence for fear that on this dangerous mission, Robert would lose his life. The ship never returned shore, and Robert feared the worst. And unfortunately, the worst was confirmed as one solitary crew member of the Golden Maid arrived into Port Providence and brought ill tidings about a dark, mysterious attack. Some otherworldly alien shape figure attacked the ship, and all the crew were lost, and this man was jittering mad as he told this story, and that was basically the only thing he could get out of this one crew member. And so as a result, Robert's one goal is to find his father's ship, the Golden Maid, and the treasure that lies beneath the waves. Robert is a slightly tall man, standing at about 5'11". He strikes a lean figure. He has dark hazel eyes and well-groomed, short, dark black hair that he usually keeps swept back and kind of greased back, although it, of course, you know, gets the salt spray in it. He has a well-trimmed black goatee, usually wrapped around some rakish smile as he's confidently, you know, winking at all the maids and singing his songs. He dresses pretty well, wears like a dark black and brown leathers with a red hooded cloak that he uses to stand out among his fellow pirates. He has a rapier tucked into his belt, as well as his father's lucky gold-handled dagger at his side. Wears a bandolier of daggers because he's a he is a bard, and he knows how to play like a lute and a number of other instruments. He is more of a physical performer. He likes to do knife tricks and like juggles daggers and like throws knives at targets and does a lot of physical performances. But yeah, he's a very confident and well-to-do young man, probably more confident than someone of his young age of 20 should be. But and his personality traits, he's known to exaggerate stories and embellish details to glory both himself and his companions. He never misses the chance to break the tension of a situation with either a joke or just some cutting words. His ideal is that he will live up to, not only live up to, but surpass the fame and glory of his father and to make his a name for himself as a renowned sailor and pirate. His main bond is to his father and his father's ship, and because like his father and his crew are what made him who he is today. But his biggest flaw as a bard, an overconfident bard, is that he will usually put himself and his friends in danger if it means the opportunity for a great story.
Classic.
The "and his friends" is a nice touch.
Damn.
As a DM, I'm a huge fan of that flaw.
I mean, it makes for great storytelling. We're just, you know, hey, you know, let's pull up besides this Kraken. Let's see what it has to say. But yeah, that's Robert. Let's go to, I want to hear from Zell Nern.
All right, I'm Daniel, and I play Zell Nern. I call the Brockmar dwarves my clan.
though, as you can see from my giant spiked shell, I am, in fact, a turtle. I was rescued as a
hatchet. It's going to be a long podcast, folks. Buckle in.
As my bale of brothers and sisters, just hours old, were eaten alive and terrorized by giant coastal rocks. The Hrakmar took me in and named me Zelnern, or Shell Friend. I have lived and trained as a barbarian among them as one of their own. I am eternally grateful for all they have done for me. Now, I must return the favor. The dwarves' situation, since the last Everstorm, has been dire. Survival in the sea caves is unsustainable, so I have gone out in search of treasures and opportunities to bring back home. Personality trait. Slow and steady wins the race.
God damn, this is so good.
Oh my god, we're in trouble. I love it.
Ideal. People. I help people who help me. That's what keeps us alive. Bond. My family and clan are the most important thing in my life, even when they are far from me. Flaw. I have an incredibly debilitating phobia of rocks and other large flying birds.
Oh my god.
So just to describe Zelnern a bit, he is a bit stout for a turtle, but it's helped him fit in among his dwarven brothers, so he never really noticed that. He has a pale greenish-gray skin and a rather spiky green and turquoise shell. He has many piercings and rings from his clan and has an axe or two on him, along with his steel drum. All of these possessions make him feel closer to home. Zell may not be the quickest one to act or to think, but when he does, it's deliberate and with certainty. His dwarven diet that included much heavier water has led to a buildup of minerals on his shell that he's exaggerated over the years by filing into sharper and sharper spikes. And he's also secretly always wanted to be able to grow a beard.
Best of luck to Zelnern.
And so for clarity, Zelnern was a turtle barbarian. Is that what I heard?
Barbarian, yep.
Barbarian and slow and steady. I'm interested to see that rage come to bear in this.
Oh yeah, he gets steady part. A little quicker when he is in rage mode, but you will come to find that.
I'm excited. Someone poke him. All right, go ahead, Zelnern, pass it on.
Celeste, why don't you go next?
Yes, definitely. So I'll be playing Celeste. One second.
Rolling up a character.
I accidentally closed out my notes, so thank you. So Celeste is a descendant of the smaller tribe that coexisted with the ancient ones, the first to inhabit these isles, but were driven out from the Everstorm. Though the lands were lost, Celeste grew up on the stories of her people and her culture, with a prophecy saying that a child of the stars would lead her family back home. When it was revealed that her grandmother, a half-moon elf, was the one that the prophecy spoke of, but she did not fulfill, Celeste was the one who took it upon herself to fulfill her family's prophecy and find the lands that belonged to her people and unearth her history. So she's been following her Taroka deck and very convinced that they have guided her to a pirate ship and that this is how she will lead her people home. Also with that, she has been seeing it as her bond with that. I'm going to say that she's also been having visions of impending doom that she's pretty convinced is the Everstorm coming back. But personality-wise, she thinks that the stars have given her a blessing and revealed a secret origin. And she also sees omens in every event and action, that the stars guide us all, and all we need to do is just listen and follow. Her ideal is that life is like the sea, always changing, and we must change with it. And then the flaw is that she is very overconfident in her taroga and will squeeze in the truth of it in every situation. So she's a druid, circle of the stars, human, fae touched. And so she is tall, young, very free spirited, with long silvery hair, brown skin, and bright gray eyes. And then when you look at her skin, there's also like small rune and star tattoos in various places.
Dope.
Very cool.
Excellent. Excited to see that character on the table as well. And it's much faster talking. who would you like to go next?
Hey, let's hear from Finnegan.
All right. Well, that's me. So I'm Ernie, and I'll be playing Finnegan. Finnegan is a shifter and a monk. He is sort of a old kooky guy who has spent most of his very, very long life on various ships, on various travels. He's spent so much time alone up in the crow's nest, which is his usual haunt, that he's found true monastic peace and enlightenment. He had a very fateful night where he was, you know, up in the crow's nest, as he does, and he came across a very cranky magical albatross who bit him, and that was what turned him into a shifter. So he is an albatross shifter. This sort of sudden transformation did not help his already extremely crusty brain. So Finnegan is stout, fairly short. He's bald on top, often sunburned up there, but he has a very large, bushy beard. He's got a beaky nose and yellow eyes. And when he is in his shifted form, he sprouts feathers sporadically out of his beard that poke out. His body hair turns into feather down, and he sprouts scaly bird flesh on his limbs.
Gross.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it's kind of gross.
He's a monster.
He is not a monster. He's a man bird.
Should all monsters trying to eat Finnegan be wary of like salmonella, or is that not a concern?
That's a great question. I'll think about that one. So for his characteristics, his personality trait I call magpie. He's obsessed with shiny objects, which comes from his avian lineage. He is both stubborn and curious. It just depends on his own whims and reasons. His ideal is something I call Call of the Wild. He's really a true explorer at heart. That's sort of all he knows. He sees the world as a shiny nut waiting to be cracked, and he values freedom above all else. His bond I call flock mentality. He feels particularly attached to the open sea and whatever crew he finds himself a part of. He's a team player. And his flaw is what I call bird-brained. He does things that make sense to him, but not necessarily everybody else.
Love it.
Strong vibes from this one.
Love it.
I can't wait.
All right. Who would you like to go to next?
Let's hear from Phil.
Awesome. I'm Cameron, and I will be playing Fivel Collings. He goes by Phil for short, Phil Collins. Phil was once a smuggler of antiquities until he was forced to cease operations in and around the Antian archipel. I'm sorry. When an unknown source began sharing information on his smuggling network, and it was basically dashed in the wind. Phil has joined the expedition in hopes of finding the Fountain of Youth so that he can buy more time to build his enterprise back up. A description of him, he's tall and lean with tan skin, sun-bleached hair. He wears a cavalier hat. It was once red, but now it's almost pink from wear. Tattered adventurer's clothes, like including rope sandals, goggles. Goggles, kind of imagine he's a human artificer, so like classic artificer is what I was thinking. Total pirate, rings on every finger, covered in tattoos, some missing teeth, some gold teeth. And he has a pointed goatee and mustache. For personality traits, Phil's pretty independent. He's a free spirit, and really only his crew can reason with him. For ideals, smuggler's code through and through. He upholds the unwritten rules of smugglers. He doesn't cheat other smugglers and will never directly harm innocents. For bonds, he, since his smuggling ring Genesis was dashed in the wind, he basically has vowed to find whoever divulged information on his operation. And his flaw is that he believes everyone can be bought, and he's cynical towards those who present themselves as virtuous.
Damn.
Nice.
I like the jaded ass pirate.
Ooh. Oh, yeah. He's like classic pirate. I love it. Brendan, you want to take it away?
Yeah, sure. Hi, I'm Brendan.
Bring us home.
I'm playing Jules. Jules is a kind of famed and renowned explorer, but from another land. There's a little wrinkle, though. While they have quite the reputation in the mainland, outside of the Shattered Isles, when Jules came here seeking the glories and treasures that were rumored to be here, unfortunately, they ran into a bit of an accident, bit off a bit more than they could chew, falling victim to a trap in one of the tombs here that were laid for overconfident explorers, just like Jules. And Jules died, or almost died, and kind of in the haze as they were slipping away from this plane, they were approached by someone, something. Jules isn't really sure. And Jules was offered another chance to sort of keep their story going, to keep their legacy going, in exchange for taking away that story that had come up to that point. So Jules kind of entered into this pact to gain a new undying life and started their new life as a warlock. But at that moment, their skills, their knowledge, their experience, their languages were all taken, and starting now as a new, freshly minted warlock. And Jules's body was kind of branded with this almost like a blood filigree. That sounds a lot grosser than it is, but it's like a scarification kind of tattoo that's like a reminder from the patron, I think, that, you know, Jules is owned in a sense, and maybe what Jules gave up wasn't quite enough to pay back that debt, although I don't think Jules is quite sure. So not exactly knowing what the full extent of that is, Jules is driven to it kind of has two main bonds. One is to, regain this position on a pedestal as this adventurer who has attained these great deeds and has this reputation, but also to repay this bond to this warlock, or otherwise somehow find their way out of that deal. So that their glory is their own and not shared with whoever this entity is. Physical description: Jules is kind of average height, slightly lanky, not bulky in their build, kind of has a confident but relaxed posture. I think, being saved from death and joining the undying as a warlock probably carries itself, can be seen in Jules's posture, a little tired. They have white blonde hair that's kind of cut short above their face, which is kind of bald and well-maintained. Jules has very light brown eyes that almost look yellow. Their features are solid and soft, but with like a strong and slender jaw. Very pale skin, apart from the thin red lines that make up this mark, which takes the shape of plants, leaves, or flowers kind of drawn in their blood. Which never quite seems to heal. and they wear practical, loose-fitting, kind of earthy tones whenever they're not wearing leather armor to try to, you know, survive. But sometimes Jules will have to obscure that mark with some wrappings that are generally kind of tightly worn to avoid drawing unwanted attention. Personality-wise, Jules is confident and eager and ready to kind of reclaim, you know, their reputation, but sort of unsure about being a warlock and isn't quite ready to be seen for, you know, what they have become. Ideals, discovery is the purest and most worthy pursuit, but fame and glory sure don't hurt. and then the flaws, along with that confidence comes this flaw I like to think of as my eyes are bigger than my stomach. Jules's overconfidence and eagerness sometimes get them into trouble, because especially now that they're back to a level one warlock, not quite sure what abilities are there or what abilities used to be there. That's me. Thank you. I'm the last one.
Sounds great. So if that's everyone, so it sounds like, to recap, the group we have before us is Rubert, a human bard, Zelnern. A half elf. Rubert, a half elf bard.
Yes. Oh, that's also, yeah, that's something I really didn't go into in Rubert's character description, was that he has no idea who his mother is. He always got conflicting stories from his father about who his mother was. And yeah, he was always told a bunch of different stories, all usually conflicting stories. And so that's one of the reasons he kind of loves story and song, is that he was always told all these grandiose stories about who his mother was. And so, it is kind of sad, but like it was always flavored in a way that was always exciting and never sad. So he never was like, he never dwelled on it too much, but yeah, he's a half elf.
All right.
Quick meta outside the podcast moment. Was that description of Jules just way too long? Should I go back and like do an
abbreviated version of that?
That's fine. You're good, buddy.
You all took about 5 minutes, so you're all about even. You're good.
Ooh. Hi.
All right. Back in? All right. So it sounds like we have Celeste, a fey-touched human druid, a Finnegan, a shifter monk, Phil Collins, a human artificer, Jules, a human warlock, Rubert, a half-elf bard, and Zelnern, a total barbarian. It's a unique little crew. It's remarkably human for most adventures. So I'm excited to see that you can fit in a normal town without people being confused about the odd collection of folks walking in. That's going to be interesting. And so it sounds like all of your characters, they have their own reasons for having signed yourself to the pirate crew of the Sturge. Some of you are seeking to find and exceed your father's legacy. Some seeking the Fountain of Youths. Other to bring back riches to give a new home to your adopted family. Others to fulfill a prophecy. Some of you seeking to restore your own glory. And some of you because you happened to already be in the crow's nest when the boat took off.
I live here.
That one is Finnegan. You signed on believing that the Sturge would be the answer to your hopes and dreams, only to find out that you've been tasked with the most basic drudge work. Like every day for over, 30 days now? You've been here for over a month. Every day has been spent doing hard, filthy labor that only the lowest on the ship are made to do. You sleep in the scrub deck, a narrow cavity under the forecastle that's not large enough to stand in. You're fed last from meals, or sometimes not at all, and your grog rations are so small, you're starting to get a tingling of the seaman's fever. That is to say, what we in the real world know as scurvy, but the people of the Shattered Isles have no idea what it is, so they call it the seaman's fever, and it's if you don't get enough grog. But today, that all can change. For reasons unknown to you, maybe fate, maybe an accident, the captain of the Sturge, the infamous pirate Captain Lascalar, has picked you six to accompany his first mate to go ashore and carry out an important task for him. That task at hand is actually to go and recover buried treasure. He has found, Captain Laskalar has come into possession of a map, not through legitimate means. He has come into possession of a map to another fellow pirate's buried treasure here on this island. He has sent his first mate ashore, along with 6 crew members, yourself, to try and recover that buried treasure. So you are now currently rowing, as we described, towards the island, ready to beach yourself there and begin searching for this buried treasure. If you find it and succeed, you'll surely win the captain's honor. You probably can't get rich on just this buried treasure because there's no way off this island. It is a deserted, uncharted island out in the middle of the Shattered Isles. So your hopes of escape, if that was your goal, pretty low here. But you might be able to win favor with the captain, with Captain Laskalar of the Sturge, and maybe get off the scrub watch, able to do good tasks and actually like start fulfilling your goals and your dreams. And so that's where we pick up with you 6 in the dinghy as it pulls up to the beach, and the first mate, Astrid, shouts for some of you to get out and drag the dinghy up onto shore. You splash out. She does as well, but you see that Cat of Nine Tails whip still at her side that she uses to lash people whenever they disobey orders. You all get out and you drag this big dinghy that can fit probably 10 people up onto shore and wedge it into the sand with the waves crashing against it. You turn and look to see that the beach around you is it's a beautiful white sand beach. It's luxurious expanse of it that rises kind of in front of you slowly until it hits a incredibly dense and foreboding jungle full of ancient nut trees and palm trees and vines and moss. And beyond those towering trees and dense foliage, you can see the rising plateaus of the island's hills itself. They're kind of level and flat and without trees up above that go higher and higher until they eventually reach the base of an incredibly sharp peak at the center of the island. Looking to your left, to the east, you can see that there is a couple hundred yards away, there is a like a small ruined old stone wall, clearly the remnant of some ancient architecture. And then to your right, to the west, you can see that there is a to the right, to the west, there is a sort of towering cliff face not far away with the waves crashing against it. Other than that, the only things around you are white sand, dense jungle, and the water you just got out of. As you disembark from the boat, it's not long before, as you're like finishing pulling the boat onto the beach itself, that the first mate, Astrid, turns and starts shouting out orders. All right, we're here to find ourselves the treasure, and there's no time to waste. The Nasher could be on us at any time. All right, so you're going to split up into groups. Celeste, Zell, you two are going to search those cliffs off that direction. Finnegan, and Robert, search the east beach, towards that wall and whatnot. Jules and Fievel, you got not the best eyes on the boat. The two of you've got to unload the gear. Get to it. I want to find this path as soon as possible. What you're looking for, according to the map, she holds it up. According to the map, the treasure of the Nasher, the pirate crew of the Nasher, is located somewhere on this island. Now, the path, it says, is hidden near this wall. She points to the wall nearby, that ruined stone wall. The treasure's hidden there, and or somewhere along here, we're able to find a trail cut into the rock or the jungle, not sure, but it should lead up to a bluff above. I want you finding that as quick as you can. You know, we can't be here too long, or else the Nasher will start to notice. So get to it. Again, Celeste and Zell, you're checking out those beach cliffs. Finnegan and Robert, I want you to search that wall and the area around it. Jules, Fievel, unload the gear so we can get to it. Come on, scram, she says.
Aye, aye.
Aye, aye, Captain.
First and you mate. See all. You see if you make any attempt to hinder, she reaches for the Cat of Nine Tails.
I start to perceive the cliff walls.
So Celeste and Zell, you head off towards those beach cliff or those cliff walls off to the side, while Finnegan and Rubert, you head off towards the wall.
Yes.
And now Phil and Jules, Phil, for one, you noticed that she was calling you Fievel, likely in a mocking way. Meanwhile, Phil and Jules, how do you feel about having been made to just unload gear while everyone else goes to adventure? How do your characters feel about that?
Yeah, this is pretty humiliating. I mean, surely she must know who I am, right? Or, I mean, maybe not.
She is your deckhand.
I guess.
I think. No, I think I'm used to it. I'm like, man, I really wish she would call me Phil. But you know that? I'm not going to say anything. That whip really hurts. Hey, you guys, you forgot the shovels. And I give each of the adventuring parties shovels as they leave.
Oh, thank you.
How could I
have forgotten?
You know, Phil, one day we're going to be piloting our own ship and we're not going to have to listen to people like this. And then everyone will call you Phil. All right.
And Jules and Phil, you see that the first mate hasn't stepped far away from you guys as you're grumbling. She's looking at the map, trying to study it to make sure she's interpreting it correctly. She's being very careful to make sure you all can't see it, and only she has access to it. So we're going to focus first on Finnegan and Rubert's search of the eastern beach towards the direction of that old ancient wall. So the two of you step away from the crowd, the old kook Finnegan and the young swashbuckler Rubert, as this unlikely combo steps down the white sand beach. You two have met before on the boat, but you've been working so hard, you probably don't know each other super well at this point. Like, you're familiar with one another, but you're not like, oh, hey, best friend, what's hanging out? Yeah, that's a thing. What's hanging out?
What's hanging out? What's hanging out? Good.
Maybe.
It's just pirate talk.
And so, looking down the south or down that eastern beach for the two of you, you kind of look down. You see, like, the beach carries on for a good long while of white sand, with jungle, like dense foreboding jungle on your left at this point, and sea on the right. And then there is, in front of you, really the only thing that stands out in the sand is this ruined ancient wall that stands maybe 10 feet high. Most of it, the structure or whatever it was connected to, is buried deep beneath the sand and waves. How would you two like to go about searching for this path? Apparently there is a path that's somehow supposed to lead up to the bluffs above, and that's the first clue in this treasure map. How do the two of you go about trying to find this path?
Well, first of all, I believe we should be looking for perhaps footprints. If we're not the only ones on this island, then there may be others here that could, you know, lead us there instead of making us do all of the hard work. What do your bird eyes see, old man?
I would like to look around and see if I spot anything that looks out of place, like maybe footsteps or maybe something on the wall that doesn't look like it should be there.
Yeah, all right, go ahead and make a perception check for me. And you'll note that I believe, Finnegan, you are great at perceiving it, if I'm not right. And that, yeah. Rubert, you're pretty good too.
It hit on a corner. Can I reroll that?
Yeah, it's a jank die. Reroll it. I can't even see it, so just pick whatever you want it to be, really.
Meanwhile, back on the ship,
good.
Jules is having the realization that, wow, they sent that old man who lives in the bird's nest, and they didn't send me.
I see everything.
Sorry, Finnegan, I missed that number. What was it?
23.
Wow. Damn. All right, so
I've rolled really good.
I'm sure, yeah. I totally believe you. So you do actually, you scan this area pretty well as the two of you walk around. It's really hard to see if there's footprints in sand, you know, because it's sand, and it's not wet or anything, so there's no, like, indications of things sinking in. It is all full of like rounded dunes because it's sand. But well, there isn't
footprints in sand.
But it nothing clearly pops out to you. What does to you look like something's come through here, maybe? Or like the sand's been disturbed in a way that's not just wind, but it's hard to tell. Is that footprints? Is that a walrus? Yes, tropical walruses flopping its way down the beach. Did a dragon swoop by here for a moment and then fly off? Could be any of these things, or all three. A dragon walrus. However, as you do look around, what pops out to you is next to this old ruined wall, which, as you look at it, it's clearly the tide submerges the wall most of the time, or quite often enough that dead coral clings to the parts of the wall, and like any like writing or old text or any evidence of who made this wall is long since worn away by the sea. But as you look around it, you do see there's actually at the highest point of the wall, like seeming like intentionally stuffed out of the way of where the tide would get it. There is a old sun-bleached backpack kind of hanging up there.
I see that something.
All right, stay back. I'll take a closer look. I wouldn't want you to hurt yourself.
Hey, I may not be a spring chicken, but I can take care of myself.
Or a spring albatross.
I may not be a spring chicken, but I am an albatross man.
So, Ruben, you shove your way forward, putting on a chivalristic act of, oh, I'll take care of this, no need to hurt yourself. And damn the consequences of condescending Finnegan. So you approach the wall first.
Yes. Confidently.
There you go.
Yeah. Ruberia approaches, and you said the backpack's like hanging off the wall?
Yeah, maybe 15 feet up. The wall is only 10 feet high. 10 feet up.
Okay. Are there any like handholds maybe that I could like attempt to climb up maybe?
Yeah, the wall is pretty well worn, and there's dead coral clinging to it, and barnacles, assuming barnacles grow in tropical environments. So it's kind of ouchy to climb, but it sounded like you had leather gloves on earlier, so you're probably mm-hmm. fine.
I play with knives, of course.
So yeah, you could probably climb it without much difficulty. It seems like it makes pretty good handholds. So you easily get up high enough to unhook the backpack from the little ledge it's clinging to, and bring it down to the ground. Looking at the backpack, it has been up there for a while. It is salt caked. The sun has bleached any color of dye out of it. However, it seems to be in fine enough shape, suggesting it hasn't been submerged in the water. It is like its drawstrings are pulled shut, making it to where nothing could get in. The only damage on it is a clear puncture wound on the back.
So like thin, like maybe like a rapier or a like sword?
It's thinner than like a long sword or broadsword, but a cutlass or rapier might have made this size of hole. Though it seems a little more it's not quite so wide. It's more of a circular hole.
Could I attempt to like, I don't know, like peer through it maybe before opening it?
Here, Sonny.
There's not much you can see inside it. There are definitely things in it. Nothing seems to be moving or alive in it, but there's definitely like objects in it.
I'm like waiting at the bottom of this cliff, and I've stretched out my hands, and I'm like gesturing now.
So Finnegan's down there like, "Gimme!" just trying to get the bag as you're kind of like crouched up on the wall, trying to get a good view in on it.
It seems dangerous to open this up here. I'll toss it down to Finnegan.
Finnegan, you catch the old backpack in your hands, and like one of the bag straps breaks. It's so old that just like catching it was enough to rip it. But the bag's contents don't spill out.
Yeah, clamber my way down.
I will wait for Ruber to come down, and then I'll like I've been trying my hardest to wait, and then I'll fling open the top as soon as he gets next to me.
You've sure enough found the treasure. I mean, it must be. As you pull open this bag, you find a coil of 50 feet of hempen rope. Not to mention an old bedroll that's become a rat's nest that even the rat abandoned. It's so old. And then finally, yeah. A water skin with a hole punctured in one side and something rattling around within. And then the real treasure, a fully stocked tinderbox.
I am obsessed with whatever's rattling around, and I do whatever I can to get it out.
How do you go about it? So you see that there's basically like a puncture wound, about the same size as the puncture wound in the backpack, in one side of this water skin. But there is no... it doesn't look like it exited. So there's a puncture wound, and there's something rattling around in there. What do you do to try to get that... basically rip open this water skin or get something out of the water skin?
I'm guessing that it wouldn't just like fit out the nozzle if I tipped it over.
It doesn't. You hear okay. It kind of get stuck in there, but then you can shake it free.
Okay, I think I probably just rip open the water skin.
All right, you kind of take a minute. What's your strength score?
It is 10.
All right, it's kind of hard to do that. You know, you feel it. And you realize that you might need a blade to actually get in there and fully rip this water skin open. It's a hard caked leather flask. Does anyone have a blade that, or either of you have a blade you'd like to apply to this? Oh,
I stick my hand out and start gesturing to Ruber with my hand again.
Yeah, I pull one of the four daggers I have on a bandolier.
And like, give me that.
Flip it, like catch it by the blade and then like hand over the handle.
So showy. I love it.
That's perfect.
The blade is handled to you, so you've just seen such elegance and showmanship with a blade. How do you wield this blade to cut this open?
Well, I'm not a blade type guy, so I probably just kind of hold it like blade side down, just kind of, you know, like so serial killer like, style.
Like, imagine almost like pecking, almost like a bird yeah. style of pecking, stab a yes. hole in it.
Yeah, exactly. Just, you know.
All right, so Finnegan, after massacring this water skin, you've successfully created a big enough hole that you're able to get your hand in there and pull, or like dump out the thing that's rattling around with it. And sure enough, it certainly is treasure. An old stone arrowhead topples to the ground.
Is it shiny?
It is of stone that's not been well polished, so it's not really shiny.
Okay. I see its potential, and I pocket it.
Hey, that could be the treasure we seek. You cannot just pocket it.
Fine. I'll keep it safe.
So Finnegan, you took a moment there to kind of study it to see is this shiny. I want you to make a history check, or like, what's your history score actually?
Your
proficiency in, because you're proficient in history, right?
Yes. So that would be a +3.
Wow. Yeah, Finnegan, just looking at this right out of the gate, this, you realize, is a goblin arrow. That backpack clearly was not of goblin creation, but the shoddy craftsmanship of this arrowhead, this is certainly a goblin's arrow. Suggesting that there might be goblins on this island. However, the two of you finish your search around the area and don't find any sort of path. Meanwhile, we're going to hop over to Jules and Phil, your conversation back on the boat as you're still unloading gear. You find that there's, among your gear that you've brought on this dinghy, you've got shovels, several lengths of rope for climbing, a block and tackle even for climbing. And you've got, you don't have any sort of camping gear or overnight gear. You, of course, have the weapons and armor that a lot of you normally equip yourselves with. Those were made available to you. But you don't have, like, your backpacks for, like, camping gear and whatnot. But as you're unloading it, you do note that there actually is an erectable mast that can be added to this dinghy if you so needed, as well as a sail equipped to it. So this dinghy technically isn't just rowable, it can be sailed. And I wish people weren't silent laughing to erectable mast.
Erectable mast is very different than erectable mast. I want to make that.
You like kind of take stock of what's in there, and as you're taking these backpacks and like you kind of drop them off on the sand, and then the first mate barks an order at you to bring them up higher. That's too close to the tide line, and you're dragging them through the sand, and it's just an unenjoyable process. I need both of you to actually tell me what your passive perception is.
11?
10.
Okay. So as you are kind of like grumbling to each other about that they sent the old man to go and investigate and me a famous adventurer is made to unload gear, and then Phil, you seem to be used to this with the first mate Astrid. I'm wondering, do either of you fear the first mate?
I think I probably should, but I just naively think I would be able to take her somehow.
Phil didn't fear her until he got the whip, I would guess. To Jules's anecdote, Phil would probably be like, hey man, you know what they say, you beware an old man in a profession where men usually die young. You know what I'm saying? There's something about that Finnegan. I don't know yet.
That tracks, honestly. Maybe I should be a little more careful around that guy.
I'm just saying. I don't know.
I guess he survived this long. What's his story anyway? I mean, I hear he came with the boat?
I don't know. I climbed up the mast and I almost fell off. It was scary.
Did he push you?
No, he was just hanging out up there.
That would scare me off too.
I imagine his like eyes peeping over the top of the Christmas tree.
Oh, you're so the one who found him.
So as you both talk about someone that frightens you, but it turns out it's not so much the first mate as much as it is the mysterious bird person. The both of you kind of notice that there are some weird growths on the trees at the edge of the jungle. Like there's a couple of palm trees kind of sticking right out in the jungle. But there are weird growths on them, like strange bulbous tumors that the trees shouldn't have. Are either of you horticulturally inclined?
I do not study such things.
Yeah, me neither.
Maybe.
But is Astrid, does she have the map open?
Yeah.
Okay. How about, can I point those out to Astrid? Just be like, hey boss, can you look at those trees? And when she turns, can I like try and steal a look at the map?
Ooh, go ahead and make a deception check for me to see if you can.
Someone's getting the whip.
Okay.
Look over there.
1 second. I'm sorry.
I'll never forgive you. I don't know what you did, but
it's 15.
15. Astrid turns. The map jerking, becoming quickly visible to you and Jules. Both of you make perception checks. As the first mate looks over,
it's 18.
Ooh. That's a 2.
Oh, Jules, you are you're not even like looking at the map. You're just staring down the beach in the direction of the old man. the old man over there. Meanwhile, you with your clever ruse, Phil Collins. You notice. You catch a quick glimpse of the map that looks like it shows a landing place with a wall at it, and that a trail leads from the landing place to a cliff base that you quickly catch the words climate, and then another trail leads out of climate, but it's a series of three trails lead past that cliff base. That all seem to be very interlocked and almost maze-like in description. You lose that and aren't able to follow that with your quick glance, but you see they seem to end at some location that in big, big letters, clearly whoever wrote this map isn't good at writing in small letters. And this is written basically like, you know, so it's like it's written in huge letters, but then some of them are squeezed down really tiny. It reads... big blocks buried at center.
Oh, that's kind of different from where the other guys are getting sent, right? Can I interpret that?
I mean, it showed that there's a wall at the place you're supposed to land. There is a wall at the place you've currently landed and a trail leading out of it.
Oh, okay.
As the first step being a trail leading to a cliff face. And it's that trail that you're currently trying to find.
Okay.
You hear the first mate kind of says, "Oh, I didn't even notice those up there. Thank the gods by Melora that you provided that, or told me that. Those are giant coconut crabs. I think we should huddle up back towards the boat before those things get hungry."
What?
You kind of now seeing that she's pointed out about the growths, there are, you realize, oh, those are large crabs clinging to the trees, looking like oak, or looking like bark-colored growths, each of them easily the size of a large dog. That are clinging to this tree. There's about three of them in total that you can see in the jungle. So the first mate comes back towards the boat in order to not let the crabs try and come after her. It doesn't seem like they're actively aggressive, but they might pick off a lone person if given the opportunity.
We can take out some crabs, right?
Well, hey, you know, I'm not really afraid of anything, but... you know, I'm not trying to speak out of turn either, but why don't we can move the boat a little bit closer to the wall, maybe?
As you suggest that, Phil, now let's quickly find out what's been happening on the other side of the beach where Celeste and Zelnern went to investigate the cliffside. The two of you, Celeste and Zelnern, the fey-touched human druid and the tortle barbarian, the two of you had the longest trek away from the group, which is why I came to you last. As the two of you kind of shuffled your way through the sand over there, Zelnern, are you slow at walking? Or are you kind of able to keep pace with Celeste?
I can keep pace, but I'm taking a deliberate slower pace because I don't want to lose anything along the way that could be a clue towards the path that we're trying to take.
All right.
I'm all for it because I believe that he might see an omen I miss. Also, I would like to point out that this morning when I was attuning myself, I noticed that the beggar was on the horizon in the stars. And I think that's a good opportunity to point out that that could mean that there is a sudden change in economic status or fortune. So I'm feeling really good about where we're going.
Excellent.
I love that so much.
And I've been explaining this the whole walk.
So, Zell, Celeste explains to you the various star signs and astrologies that they've been seeing this morning while the two of you walk, and you kind of are, you know, looking around at everything as you're going. So what's the... eventually, though, the two of you reach this perilous cliff wall. So it's white sand beaches that jut up to suddenly, like, probably 40-foot tall, or maybe lower, cliff face wall that's this... like rocky outcrop that juts out from the jungle and juts out past you and out into the water. Where the waves hit it, it sends up great splashes of water and there's spiked rocks all around it. It would suck to fall off or jump off this like bluff if you were up above. And in fact, climbing it looks like a hassle. It's doable. A person who's or at least not negative at strength probably could do it pretty easily. But imagine trying to carry treasure up such a wall. That's unreasonable. So it probably isn't, like, they probably didn't bury the treasure at the top of this climbing up it. As you reach this cliff face, and, you know, see that, like, the water's splashing against it on your left, how do you go about trying to search for a trail that leads up to the bluffs above, which is apparently what the treasure map says to follow?
I think I actually will start by trying to climb up a little bit just to get a better bird's eye view of the ground.
All right, so go ahead and make me for me a DC 10 strength athletics, because it's not so easy, it's impossible, and a failure will topple you down onto sharp rocks.
24.
Okay. We're only rolling hard to very hards today. All right. You kind of step up to the rocks as Celeste laughs at the idea of being able to climb it, and you slowly but deliberately place your hands on the correct handholds. Start climbing. It is a slow and steady wins the race kind of pace where it's like, oh, he's making progress. There's no flashy moves, but he's getting up there. And after a
just
few
like a beggar.
Minutes...
You're being just like a beggar, Zelnern. It's so impressive. You don't look like someone who can climb, but boy, oh boy, like you show the wealth on the inside.
Thank you.
Zelnern, you're trying to climb all the way to the top of this 40-foot bluff, or are you just trying to get like halfway up to kind of try and peer around you, or?
Does it seem like it will be too difficult to climb all the way up?
It looks like the DC kicks up to 15 to go higher than 20 feet. So you'll have to make one more check.
I'll at least take a look at 20 then and see what
right.
I can see.
I
jump up and touch his toe, like try to touch the tail of him, knowing that so far this beggar on the horizon has caused good fortune to try to guide his way, as if the stars themselves are guiding him up this cliffside.
Oh, so you're using your Taroka deck predictions as your form of guidance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nice. Okay, so you give him guidance, so he gets plus 1d4 to his next ability check roll, which is going to be a perception check. So go ahead, Zell, make a perception check with advantage because Celeste is also helping as well as having cast guidance.
Oh, helping as well? So 21 then with her help.
21. All right. The two of you glance around and Zelnern, you from this vantage, you actually, most people would have missed it, but you grew up in sea caves. So you actually see that the way that the currents are flowing suggests that there is a sea cave hidden on the other side of this cliff. Like if you wade out into the water a bit, you could circle around to where there's probably a sea cave where the water is flooding out of. Other than that, though, there doesn't seem to be any clear trail.
I explained that to Celeste on my deliberately slow crawl back down.
All right. You reach the bottom. So Celeste and Zell, you found that there's a sea cave in this rock face, just around the corner of it. But you haven't necessarily found a trail. Do you want to go investigate that sea cave on your own, or do you want to return to the group and tell them that you found a cave?
I mean, it might be good to know what's already in it instead of making multiple trips.
All right.
I will. I can wait out and get in there, or do you want to come with?
Yeah, I'll come with.
All right. The two of you wade into the water, and... Zelnern, you as a turtle are able to hold your breath for a remarkable amount of time, right?
An hour.
Wow. Okay. The two of you wade out. Celeste, what's your constitution modifier?
My constitution modifier is plus one.
All right. So yours is more like a minute, where Zell's is more like an hour.
Yeah.
So as the two of you kind of get out towards the water, you get maybe waist deep, and then it starts to get a little bit deeper for Zelnern because he's a turtle and he's a short turtle at that. It's more like up to his shoulders, but he doesn't care because he just holds his breath. Celeste, it's maybe up to your, you're tall, so it's maybe like a little bit halfway up your chest, like waist, I guess. And then as the two of you are moving across the cliff face, the water is warm. It's not super salty. A couple fish are darting by, and this area seems relatively clear of coral, so you're not getting like scratched and scrabbled up. But you circle around to the far side, and you do sure enough find a narrow sea cave, big enough to accommodate one, maybe two people, if they're squeezing next to each other, in width at a time. A large creature would struggle to get through here, but a person could easily get through it. A human-sized creature could easily get through it. And as the two of you kind of look inside it and peer up, you realize this sea cave actually seems to have been bored straight through the rocky outcrop and leads up to the bluff above, suggesting that this is, in fact, the trail you've been looking for.
Knew it. The stars have guided us here. Do we keep going?
Do the two of you keep following? Oh, go ahead.
We should turn back and get the rest of them.
The patient, well-thought words of Zelnern, you hear those, Celeste. Do you ignore them and push on anyways, or do the two of you turn around to go flag the rest of them to tell them that you found the trail.
Well, Zelnern seems pretty lucky right now, so I take one last look at the sea cave, but I guess I'll trust him. And we'll go back.
It is best to have our full strength behind us.
All right. So this is just as Phil was saying, well, maybe we should move the boat closer to that seawall, or closer to that wall. At this point is right when Robert and Finnegan return. Finnegan holding a backpack and an arrowhead. Arrowhead's tucked away, but clutching an old backpack. And Robert shaking his head, probably saying, suggesting there's no...
We found it. We found the grand treasure.
as you say that, at the same time, Zelnern and Celeste are also returning. So you're all kind of regathered back at the boat, where there's these three crabs sort of gathered up on the trees, not 15, 20 feet away from you. Celeste and Finnegan.
I eye them suspiciously.
Do we want to do anything about those?
Let sleeping crabs lie.
No, Zelnern is right. They're just crabs.
I lick my lips a little bit.
Celeste and Finnegan, you two, I think, both have the highest passive perception at 15. The both of you are aware that the idea that these are sleeping crabs seems a little bit unrealistic, as one of them has just shuffled down to the bottom of the tree.
Ooh, yeah, these are moving. I feel like unless they're sleepwalking, we should do something.
And do something.
I start rubbing my hands together.
And do something you should, because one of them uncurls himself from the tree, brandishing his large claws, snapping them in the air, and comes shuffling down towards you with the other two in wake. I need you all to roll initiative.
Hell yeah.
Dun, dun, dun.
Arr.
Arr. Aye,
and then should we... Are you ready for this?
Yeah, hook me up. 15. I can't imagine. 15 for Zelnern. 15. This is way harder without roll 20.
21 sorry, for Celeste.
All right. Anyone else?
15 also for Finnegan.
Both of you roll off.
Roll off.
Robert got a 5.
I got a 13
nice.
On this.
Nice.
19 for Phil Collins.
Celeste, Phil. And Jules.
16.
All right. So it's going to be Celeste, then Phil, then Jules, then Finnegan, then Zell, then Robert with the giant crabs have their place here. You'll find out. All right. So with initiative rolled up, let's do this. The crabs come shuffling towards you. Fortunately, Finnegan and Celeste noticed them or noticed that they were moving already, so you are not surprised and you don't get killed in your first encounter. Ah. The three giant crabs shuffle down towards you, and Celeste, you are the quickest to act. What do you do? They're within engagement range of you. They're like 20 feet away from you at most.
Okay, great. I cast Thorn Whip, so seagrass comes up from the beach and smacks the crab closest to me, so that way it lands, hopefully, not adjacent to me.
Okay, so you're not trying to yank the thing towards you, but it's getting pulled in your direction, so it's closer to everyone, much easier to access. Yeah. I'm going to make an attack roll.
15.
It easily strikes the crab. Actually, not easily, directly. It's a natural armor, wants to resist this, but you manage to wrap it around with a thorn whip. It cracks the shell a little and drags the crab towards you. Roll damage.
6.
The crab is sort of crunched inwards, not quite destroyed by your thorn whip, but incredibly wounded. The crab kind of scrambles a bit, struggling in pain, and you can't tell if it's about to run away or charge you to try to eat you still. And then, Phil, what do you do?
I'm going to cast a Ray of Frost on it. Before I flavor it, it's going to be a 7 to hit.
That is not a hit, unfortunately.
Okay, so Phil like kind of pulls a pistol from his side, an arcane firearm, and he pulls the trigger on it, and it misfires, and he like smashes it against his knee. And then can I kind of reposition myself and move behind the boat to achieve any sort of cover?
Yeah, so you're kind of moving back. You're still within 30 feet of them, but you fall back behind the boat so that you are not an appetizing target anymore. They'd have to scramble over a boat and everything.
Okay, and then I'll end my turn.
All right, and then as soon as Phil finishes that, Jules, you are the next available. You're kind of near the boat as well with Phil, but not behind it. What do you do?
So
three crabs shuffling towards you.
Seeing that there's this one crab that's kind of wounded, I hold kind of like a bandage up to my arm against where one of these like traces in my skin is. And as I hold it against it, you see this little, I don't know if you see it or if you just hear this little bell chiming as I cast Toll the Dead.
Nice.
The damaged crab.
And that calls for the crab to make a constitution saving throw, correct?
Wisdom.
Wisdom. Well, the crab is not wise. I got a 10.
Yep, that's misses the 13.
And then he is wounded, so he's going to take the D12 damage instead of the D8 from Toll the Dead, correct?
Yep.
Nice. So you, drawing upon that that Eldritch Pact of yours, and drawing upon these markings against yourself, it draws the crab closer towards the death, closer into the hands of the Rotting King. Good roll damage.
5 damage.
Wow. The crab recoils, shudders, and then collapses on the ground dead. With that crab slain, the other two keep scrambling forward. And to your despair, do you move to position yourself behind the boat in the water like Finn?
Yeah, I'll move to
Finn, like Phil.
Stay at a range. And you'll notice that the bandage I held up is now, you know, a little bit stained with blood.
Spooky. Meanwhile, the two crabs shuffle forward towards Zell, Nern, and Celeste and Finnegan, the only three. Actually, Robert is also up front. So they shuffle towards you, looking first the large turtle meat. One of the giant crabs moves towards you. Its huge pincher crunching down on you for is 14 a hit on you, Zell, Nern?
It is not.
It crunches against your shell, but its claw can't squeeze. Like, it gets you in a grip, but it can't crunch. It just, it's like trying to break a, like a Brazil nut with regular nutcrackers. It sucks, and it's a terrible time. That is an oddly specific example, but it's relevant because onsen nut trees that are these crabs climbed off of are the in-world equivalent of Brazil nut trees. And so it was relevant and top of mind.
doesn't exist.
Damn.
And so they're onsen nut trees. And as you sit there with the crab trying to claw you, it does nothing at all. Meanwhile, another crab scuttles forward, this time moving towards Robert. The crab scuttles towards you. You brandish your blade towards it, and it snaps at you for a 6 to hit.
That's a miss.
Easily you sidestep the thing.
It goes to claw at me, and I like put my rapier forward, and it like its claws just wrap around the rapier, and I just toss the claw aside.
And then its other tiny claw looks like it's going to try and snap you, but it only gets one attack. So, Zell Nern, what do you do? There's a crab on top of you trying to claw you, but it can't get a good grapple on you. It can't break your shell. What do you do?
Finnegan actually goes before me.
Oh, Finnegan does get to go before you. Hey. Finnegan, what do you do? The crab's left you alone.
I'm going to voraciously and maybe surprisingly for how old I look, like leap on top of the nearest one to me.
Nice. So you run on next to the one that's between you and Robert, and you leap literally on top of it?
Well, I'm going to like leap at it and come down. Like I'm going to try to crack its shell with my fist so I can crack it open.
Oh, wow. Okay, so
you're going to eat it.
Yeah, oh yeah.
All right, so you dive bomb onto this thing. Make your attack roll.
All right.
And I'm going to give advantage to that because I love the flair of that.
I'm glad I had advantage. I have an 18 to hit.
18 to hit. You easily crunch into the crab's shell. Fragments of the shell splinter, but it probably doesn't kill it. Roll damage.
Six damage.
The crab sort of recoils, alive but bloodied from your blow. The crab looks wounded. You've definitely damaged its shell. It's going to have a bad life from here on out. But it still might kill you before it has a chance to do that.
I'm going to use my bonus action to strike with my other fist. Oh.
Monks are OP. Two attacks at first level, OP.
That is a 16 to hit.
Also a hit. You crack through the shell with your bare fists.
I'm hungry. All right. That is also a 6.
Another 6. This time the crab cracks open, breaking wide open, and the crab meat spills out, the crab dying.
I start stuffing it in my face. It likes the juices trickle down my beard.
There's still another crab coming, currently pinching into Zelnern. And Zelnern, as you're kind of grappling with this crab, you actually see another two crabs kind of skittering down through the trees towards you. What do you do, Zel?
All right, since I have a shell myself, I kind of understand their weak points. And while it's up trying to attack me, I do an underhand swing with my axe to get to its underside.
I like it. I like the leveraging of like that situational advantage, using knowledge of this thing's weakness points. So I'm going to give you advantage on that. They're giant monster crabs that tried to eat you.
24.
On 24, you easily crack its shell.
5 damage.
And this is a great axe you're wielding?
Yes.
Nice. You cut into her 5 damage. Much like before, this kind of bloodies or weakens the crab, but doesn't outright kill the creature as it tries to grab you. These crabs clearly hoping to take you away into the trees and eat you. You drive the thing back before it can do to you what happened to so many of your brothers and sisters. Rubert, what do you do? Finnegan's killed the crab in front of you. There's another dead crab laying nearby. There's a live wounded one next to Zelnern, pretty close to you. And then there's two more scrabbling their way down the beach.
I will gracefully, while Finnegan's stuffing the raw crab meat into his face, like hunched over the crab, I'll like leap over Finnegan and then run up next to Zelnern, and then while I imagine he like hit the crab upwards and underside is exposed, I'm going to like stab into the underside of the belly with my rapier.
Wonderful. Yeah, you're also going to gain that advantage then as you kind of leverage that same exploit he did.
Critical.
Oh, nice. Ooh. Don't even need the advantage. It's certainly a deadly blow. Let's find out how deadly.
Ultra deadly.
14 piercing damage.
Wow, if it was at full health, that would have slain it outright. The crab is lanced straight through. Your blade pulls out gracefully, and the crab dies behind you.
I leave my rapier in it, and then I'm going to use my bonus action to pull Ed to make a two-weapon fighting attack.
Nice.
As I pull one of the daggers out and then throw it at one of the crabs approaching.
Nice. So do you use the same hand as that rapier? Are you ambidextrous, or are you right-handed?
He's ambidextrous from all the knife juggling and everything. Nice.
So stabs it, drops it, blade goes soaring out, stabbing into one of the crabs, hopefully. Let's find out.
Yeah, let's find out. 9 plus 3, or 5, 14.
14, it glances off the shell uselessly. The crab skitters forward undeterred. Celeste, it's your turn now. There's two more crabs skittering down the beach towards you, Finnegan, Zell, and Rubert. What do you do?
I will look at the... I'll do the same thing I did last time where I cast Thorn Whip on the nearest crab.
All right. Roll an attack roll. Like the vine lashes out and grabs at the crab, dragging it forward.
13.
Unfortunately, it cannot break the shell. The crab's natural armor of AC 15 makes it too durable against these first level attacks as you try to whip and grab it.
I also use my movement to move out of range because I'm best from a distance.
All right, so you retreat away from the giant crab so that it can't kill you on its turn.
Yeah, I'm best on the horizon.
Meanwhile, Phil, you've already actually the previous turn retreated to a a safe space between the with the boat between you and the crabs. You're still within 30 feet, but the boat's between you and the crabs. What do you do?
Well, I look over at Finnegan and I shudder and think of the conversation that Jules and I had.
Only confirming.
And I shout to him, stay focused, Birdman, there's more.
That's actually so perfect. I was about to be not fighting anymore. I was so focused on eating.
And then Phil, he like fiddles with his gun and turns a knob on the side of it and tries to cast Ray of Frost again. It's for 19 to hit.
Nice. So like the first time you're like trying to get the shot, it's jammed. This time you adjust a knob and your arcane creation launches the frost forward.
Like yeah.
It's super cool.
It's going to be 6 to hit, and it's just like, and just like two icicles kind of shoot out of it and land on the closest crab.
And you said it's a 6 to hit?
Yeah, or I mean, no, 19 to hit for 6 damage.
Okay, I was going to say, 6, 19. yeah, this time the icicles stab into it for 6 damage. The crab shudders and is actually slowed, unable to really reach you. It's going to definitely focus on other people. And then are you finished, Phil?
Yeah, all in my turn.
All right, Jules, what do you do? You're back behind the boat with Phil. The crabs are a good distance away. There's two of them. They're still within 30 feet, but they're probably not going to be able to come to you.
So the one that got hit with a dagger, is that the...
The dagger bounced off it and did not wound it. Excellent. So there's one that has been hurt by Phil's Ray of Frost from his weapon.
Got it. Yeah, I'm going to reach out to do the same thing, try to pull it over the barrier from this life into the next one.
Okay. The crab struggles. It gets a 14. That's a wise little crab.
Ignore that, the bell, wise crab.
The crab is immune to the call of the rotting king's grave, as he's a crab, and unfortunately you do not drag it into the death, into that afterlife, and the crab continues to shuffle forward. In fact, crabs shuffle forward now. One crab shuffling towards I guess it's Giselle, Finnegan, and Rubert that are close to it. So the wounded crab shuffles towards the vulnerable Finnegan, who's actively eating another crab. You can't tell if this crab's trying to eat the other crab or eat Finnegan until it gets close and claws at him for 8. My dice are fans of you all right now. It claws uselessly at you. Well, meanwhile, the other crab, this one moves towards Zelnern and tries to pinch him for 7. Right. If I rolled above an 8 right now, it pinches at you uselessly, and the crabs can't seem to get the better of you. Your hero's journeys don't end from crabs. Finnegan, what do you do? You're eating crab meat.
Yeah, I've just been stuffing my face, like fully focused and just having the time of my life. I love crab meat. I was like full attention on that until I heard my crewmate shouting, and that snapped me out of it, luckily. And I, you know, see this injured, sad little crab, surprisingly smart crab.
Wise.
Kind of come toward, yeah, wise crab, come towards me. Tries to snip me, but can't quite do it. And I'm kind of like, oh, what are you trying to do there? And so I'm going to just shift my body over and double hammer hands.
I like that there's no adrenaline rush. It's just like, I'm just going to eat it.
You roll over and start crunching the next crab. Make it your attack roll.
Okay, and I would like to also do the bonus action. Should I do both at once?
Yes, go ahead. See me break this crab.
Oh, I got a crit on one of them, and the other one definitely didn't hit.
Okay, let's go ahead and roll that crit damage as you like deflect one blow off it, but then the second blow is a powerful strike into it.
And crit, remind me, is double dice?
So you roll both dice twice. No, that word doesn't work. Double your dice, yeah.
Yes, okay.
Dice pool, not the result.
Ooh, and then plus the, mod just once, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's a 10. 10 damage.
Oh, you crunch into the crab. Unfortunately, it does not kill the crab outright. It's super wounded, like anyone could kick this thing to death, and it's likely going to flee, but it doesn't kill the crab outright. And then if you are finished, Finnegan?
I'm just annoyed that it has distracted me.
That is fair. Zelnern, there's a crab trying to pinch you, but completely failing, and then there's a crab like 10 feet away from you next to Finnegan that's trying to pinch him, but completely failing. What would you like to do?
Since the one on Finnegan looks like it's going to just try to flee, I will leave that one alone. But the one that is on me, I will. I assume it's still kind of trying to grab onto me, so I'll hold up my arm and just bring my axe right onto its softest
part
that I can find.
All right, make an attack roll. This one seems to have positioned itself slightly differently, having seen the way you killed the last one. I don't know if crabs can learn combat tactics, but
20 to hit.
You still cleave through its armor.
13 damage.
Wow, and without a crit, you kill this thing from, if it was even at full health. The crab splits open. It was already chilled, so now it's like frozen crab spills onto the ground, so this will keep. If you put some milk, that's the way it freezes best. As you kill this giant crab, there's only the one next to Finnegan left, and we're looking at...
Rubert?
I think it's Zell, then Rubert, what do you do?
I'm going to finish that crab off with a flourish. Right. I go to stab through it, make a crab skewer.
Roll your attack.
That's 15 to hit.
Nice. You pierce into it. Roll, I think minimum damage is at least 2, which is its HP. So, oh, wow. You easily skewer this thing, and the crab collapses to the ground dead. The piles of broken crabs are now kind of littered about you, all 5 of these giant coconut crabs that were intent on eating you, now lay dead around you on the beach. Astrid, the first mate who engaged not at all in that encounter, looks on and says, "Well done. Knew there was a reason we brought you. The captain sent you all along." All right, so... Did you find the entrance?
I believe we did. There is a sea cave entrance on the other side of that bluff.
She eyes it with skeptically. You see how quickly she jumped you from trying to fight crabs and fighting for your lives to get back to work. And this is incredibly typical of the first mate. There is no, there is no rest, no I'm tired or I'm wounded. It is all work, work, work. If you're not working hard enough, I'll give you a reason to work. As she eyes it skeptically, she then asks what you found by the wall.
We found a backpack with not much of note inside. I don't know. What was in there, Finnegan?
Musty old bedroll. Lots of rope. You know, a canteen. Little arrowhead. That's about it.
Alright. She says, "Well, then that doesn't sound like the way. It must be the other direction." And gestures off.
I'm secretly so relieved that I get to keep the arrowhead. I knew that if I withheld the information, it would make it more important to her, so...
She seems unconcerned about a random arrowhead you found with a punctured water bottle, and instead, Jen focuses her attention on the sea cave that Zell and Celeste found. She points to the gear packs that you've unloaded, Phil and Jules, and says for everyone to grab hold of the gear and follow her, and then tells for Zell to lead them to those sea caves. Everyone kind of hoists a backpack if there's one needed. As you're kind of labored down with these like backpacks or carrying a shovel over your shoulder, your eyes keep firm attention on that foreboding jungle to you just off the beach. That jungle from which you've already seen 5 monstrous crabs emerge intent on killing you. And you wonder, if that's what hangs out near the beach, what terrors lurk in the deeper depths within?
Hello, everyone. This is Ryan, who plays your favorite bard, Rubear Greyshand. I just wanted to say here at the end of the episode a huge thank you to everyone who listened. It really means a lot to me that you took the time to listen to this all of the way through. It's a weird, fun experiment that we're trying out, and it really, really, really means a lot to me. I also wanted to let everyone know that we have a Twitter account at ChaoticNormPod, an Instagram, ChaoticNormalPod, as well as an email. That email address is ChaoticNormalPod@gmail.com. There you can send any comments or questions, and we will be answering those questions in the future on some bonus, and as well as some other bonus content on our Patreon page that we'll be launching here shortly. But yeah, once again, before I let you go, just another huge, huge, huge thank you. It really, really actually does mean a lot to me. Yeah, and if you could share this with anyone that you think might enjoy this, that would mean the world to me. And if you know you want to, rate and review it on iTunes. That would go a long way to show that there are people that care and are listening. But yeah, we'll be releasing episodes weekly, and next week we will be releasing part two of the intro to the Shattered Isles. So, and I'll talk to you next week. And until then, bye!
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.